Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan. Today we have a program from 1980s. It's kind of late in the history of drama radio, but it was there just the same. The Mutual Radio Theater, and we have a program called A Nearly Perfect Crime. So now let's go back to April 11th, 1980, and the Mutual Radio Theater.
This is Leonard Nimoy. We're in Piraeus, the port of Athens, Greece, and it's a dark and stormy night, a night for trouble if you don't watch out.
Careful, lady, that gangplank is wet.
Yes, so I discovered. The captain, please.
What is it about?
Personal.
Oh, I should have known. Right over there, ma'am.
Thank you. I was looking for Captain Clay.
Evening, ma'am. I am Captain Braga, new skipper of the Golden Girl.
A new skipper?
Clay got sick. Pneumonia or something.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Then could I have a word with Mr. Perez? A personal matter.
Perez?
Your first name.
Well, we get all new officers on the bridge, ma'am. A new skipper likes to work with people he's used to.
Oh, I see. Well, then I'm sorry I wasted your time, Captain. Good night.
Good night.
Well, that was quick. Everything all right?
Thank you, yes. But would you send a message to John Cooper for me?
John Cooper? Who's he?
Your steward.
Our steward's name is Abdullah.
Oh, thank you. Good night.
Something is very wrong. A new skipper. A new first mate. Yes, of course, it can happen easily enough. But a new steward as well? Maybe it makes sense, but this young woman seems to think it doesn't. Perhaps that's because she's engaged in a very deadly business. A business in which human life counts for very little indeed. It's just the money that matters. And that's only the beginning of our story.
Mutual Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. 5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week, brought to you in Elliot Lewis's production of the Mutual Radio Theater. Our story, A Nearly Perfect Crime by Alan Caillou. Our stars, Lloyd Bochner and Janet Waldo.
The young woman we just met is named Joni Trent. She looks, talks, and behaves just like an ordinary tourist. In fact, she's very bright, attractive, and anything but a tourist. She's not as frightened as she ought to be, because Greece is a quiet and peaceful sort of country, and very safe. Well, usually, anyway.
Well, how does it look, Johnny?
Worse than a brother's murder.
Hmm?
Rank. It smells to heaven. The whole crew has been replaced right down to the steward. And the guard on the gangplank had a gun tucked away under his arm.
Good. Good, I like it. That's all we need to know.
Where to now?
Hungry?
Famished.
And all this vast amount of money floating around, my darling, just begging to be picked up, makes me think of a really expensive dinner. What's that up there?
A detour, Hillary. Watch it.
A detour? That barricade wasn't there when we drove up. What was on?
Are you all right?
No. Yes. Yeah, don't worry about it.
A I didn't congratulate you, Mr. Piros, did I, on your purchase of the Golden Girl? At such a good price, too.
No, you did not, Braga. That was very remiss of you.
Then I do so now.
The price wasn't good either. I paid more than I wanted to. It was a mistake.
You made a worse mistake than that.
Oh? And what was that?
Trying to kill that girl and her companion last night, even though you failed. It was a foolish move.
Well, but what girl?
You didn't know?
Tell me what you're talking about, Captain Braga.
You mean it wasn't you?
Tell me!
Just after two bells last night, this young woman came aboard looking, so she said, for Captain Clay. She got sought up as she left the harbor. And if it wasn't you, I'd like to know who the hell it was. Yeah, that will be Mr. Souza.
I'll get it myself.
Ah, my dear Mr. Piros, how good to see you again.
Mr. Souza, do come in. You two know each other, of course.
Of course.
And I am correct, no doubt, in assuming that the briefcase you are holding contains...
Final payment on the Golden Girl, $100,000 in cash. And that envelope, I am sure, contains the insurance papers I need.
It does indeed. Insurance on the vessel for $500,000, on her cargo for $5 million.
Amasios! Perfect!
You are now the full owner of the splendid Golden Girl and a custodian, for the moment at least, of her very valuable cargo, which is for delivery, as you already know, to Mr. Aman of Singapore. A poor fellow. $5 million worth of munitions can fetch almost as much in Singapore as they can in... shall I say, Beirut?
I prefer not to have heard that comment, my dear Mr. Souza.
Of course. And how right you are. The watchword is always a security.
It is why I have lasted so long, Mr. Souza.
And it's my earnest hope that we may do business again soon, dear Mr. Piros.
Perhaps. Tell me where I might find you in a few days' time.
Beirut, perhaps?
Then I thank you and bid you good night. As we Greeks say, dear Mr. Souza, Stinyasas, health be on you.
And as we Arabs say, Salam alaikum, peace be on you.
And peace on you too, dear friend. All right, Braga, now tell me about that young woman last night. You said she had a companion. Did you find out about them?
I thought you'd never ask.
Well?
I made a few inquiries, of course. Her name is Joni Trent. This is Hilary Marshall, registered at the Grand Britannia Hotel as just a visiting businessman. But the word's out, Mr. Piros, all over the underworld.
Go on.
Hilary Marshall is a gun runner. You nearly knocked off a good customer, Mr. Piros.
I told you it wasn't me.
Okay, I believe you. When do we sail for Beirut?
At once.
Freighters are not bought and sold quite like trucks. You'd never sell a loaded truck, for example, in the hope that its cargo would promptly reach its proper destination. But ocean-going vessels are commonly traded in dock or on the high seas, loaded or empty. There's nothing unusual about it at all. Sometimes, indeed, a ship will change hands several times while she's en route from one harbor to another. Under maritime law, delivery of the cargo in such cases is mandatory. It makes it very easy for the thieves who carry briefcases rather than guns. And when there's a particularly valuable cargo aboard, all kinds of exciting things are liable to happen.
Joni, over here.
Oh, there you are. One of the nice things about working for you, Hillary, is that you always find such good places to eat.
Well, what have you got for me?
What have you got for me? I'm ravenous.
Waiter, another bottle of wine, please.
Hillary.
And some more of that lobster.
Yeah, come in, sir.
So the Golden Girl has left port. Now, do we know where she's headed?
The satellite readout says she's on a course of 152 degrees. Her port clearance papers say she's headed for Port Said, the entrance to the Suez Canal, then on to Singapore. Canal documents have been issued to her, and everything is simply marvelous. Could I have some of your wine while I'm waiting?
Of course. Marvelous, except for hot.
Port Said and the canal are on a bearing of 170, not 152.
Oh, now isn't that interesting? And have you, my darling Joni, discovered by any chance where a course of 152 will take her?
Not by chance, but by design. I looked it up. It will take her to Beirut.
Splendid. One of my favorite cities anywhere. Why don't you take a cab over to the airport and pick up some tickets for us?
Hillary, I have already done that. We leave in a little under 3 hours. And where's my lobster?
One bottle of Retsina, one plate good lobster.
It does smell good, doesn't it?
I can't see a thing in this fog. It's getting worse.
Good. It means we can't be seen either. Why do you think we are running without lights? I tell you, we come to very dangerous waters now, full of Israeli patrol boats. If they find out from their spies in Greece that we are carrying all those guns, I tell you, I don't want no trouble with Israelis.
You're a very nervous sort of man, aren't you, Braga?
No, just careful. You know, the Christians and the Muslims in Beirut have started fighting again. Boom, 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 everywhere.
Braga, if you want to make us a great deal of money quickly, then just bring this ship into port and leave the worrying to me. There are so many options open to us now. So many ways to get rich.
Didn't I hear you say, Hillary, in a moment of weakness, that Beirut was one of your favorite cities?
It is indeed. It has lots of character.
They're all killing each other out there.
Put it down to a kind of Arab exuberance. Now, please close that window, my love, and draw the drapes. We have to be careful, even in the hallowed enclaves of a first-class hotel.
The beautiful people are all lounging around the pool down there as though it were the safest place in the world. Don't they know?
All this militant nonsense, my dear Jenny, cannot be allowed to interfere with business as usual. Now, Beirut is a dead city, but it's still very much alive. Let me see the file again, would you? So, what have we got? Piros will be here soon with the Golden Girl, which he owns, carrying $5 million worth of armaments, which he does not own, destined for a certain Mr. Aman of Singapore. Poor Mr. Aman, he will have paid for them in full at the time of the loading, won't he?
It's customary.
Oh. 30,000 Kalashnikov machine pistols, 12,000 MG-42 light machine guns, 7,000 88mm rocket launchers, anti-tank rifles, heavy machine guns, landmines, hand grenades. Enough ammunition to start a major war with. Every gun runner in town will be after this. We'd better see Piros the moment he gets in.
Yes. I hope you realize how very dangerous it will be, Hillary.
Why should it be? I'm a cash-on-the-barrel customer. In any case, you'll be there to hold my hand, won't you?
It's just that I don't want anything to happen to you. I really am in love with you, Hillary.
Oh, come, we can't have tears at a time like this. We're on the verge of pulling off yet another very satisfying job. And I think that perhaps I'm in love with you too, my darling.
Hello? Yes, this is Mr. Marshall's secretary. Who? Hold on, I'll see if he's in. Hillary, you won't believe it, but John Cooper is here to see you. The ex-steward of the Golden Girl. You find that interesting?
Very.
Yes, send him up, please. Hillary, you really do.
Find it interesting? Yes, of course.
No. You really do love me?
Oh, that. Well, yes, it's a distinct possibility, I'd say. Offhand and without too much reflection.
Oh, Hilary. Come in, Mr. Cooper.
Thank you, Miss.
I'm Hilary Marshall. What can I do for you, Mr. Cooper?
It's, what I can do for you, Mr. Marshall, sir. I've got some information for sale. It might interest you quite a bit.
And why should you think that?
Because I know who you are. I was in Athens when you were making inquiries about the Golden Girl. I used to work on her. I was her steward.
And was it you who fired on us when we left the harbor?
No. No, I didn't even know about that. I'm not a gunman, sir. I'm just a steward. But I'm not a fool either. I worked it all out and put two and two together. You're an insurance investigator, aren't you?
Well, that's a very amusing deduction. But do go on.
And I know the insurance companies are rolling in money. $1,000?
Since I don't know what your information is, let's say 500 and start talking.
Well, 2 months ago, I was steward on another ship called the Animos. She was carrying $500,000 worth of scrap brass for a man named Aman in Singapore. But the Animos was sold en route and a new owner diverted her to Beirut for so-called repairs. And while she was here, the cargo got secretly offloaded and sold on the black market. She put out to sea again, caught fire, and sank. The new owner picked up the insurance on both the ship and the cargo.
Very interesting.
And when the Animos sank, there just happened to be a small boat standing by to take off the crew under Captain Braga. That new owner, Mr. Marshall, sir, was a Greek named Pyrrhos. He's now the new owner of the Golden Girl, and he's planning the same thing for her, too. And if that isn't worth a lot of money to you, then I don't know what is.
Johnny, give Cooper his $500, will you?
Yes.
And I will give him some very valuable advice. Cooper, if you choose to run around Beirut, of all places, where everybody is a spy, telling these things to everyone you happen to think might be on the side of law and order, then your life just might be in very grave danger.
Happen to think... Oh, Lord. You mean...
Mr. Cooper, I am not an insurance investigator, heaven forfend. I am a customer for the Golden Girl's cargo. And my valuable advice is, take your money and get out of here fast. Go to your adoring Maria, perhaps.
How do you know about Maria?
Never mind. But go to her before I start wondering what the orthodox way might be of disposing a body in a suite of a first-class hotel.
Oh, my Lord. I thought...
No, Cooper, you didn't think, and that is your problem.
Take your money, Mr. Cooper, and run.
Yes. I won't breathe a word. Not a word to anybody.
Goodbye, Mr. Cooper. So nice to have met you.
Yes. Yes, goodbye.
That is a very frightened man.
And he has every reason to be. There's no room in this business for amateurs.
We're talking about one of the most profitable rackets in the history of double dealing. You buy a ship loaded down with a good cargo. You divert it, as the legitimate owner, to a friendly port. You sell that cargo on the black market, because physical possession is everything. It's simple, neat, tidy, profitable. It's also quite perilous.
Who is it?
It's me, John. Open up, quickly.
Oh, my darling, what is it? You're so pale.
Because I'm scared, Maria. Scared out of my wits. I looked the deaf angel right in the face and I got away.
Oh, John, what happened?
This fellow Marshall, I told you about him.
Yes, yes, the insurance investigator.
No, I was wrong there. A mistake that could have cost me my life. That's what I thought he was. But he's not, Maria. He's one of them, a gunrunner.
Oh, no!
There's no doubt about it at all. I told him all about Piros and Braga and the munitions on board the Golden Girl.
Jean, they could have killed you.
I know it. Pour me a drink, please, a large one.
Oh, yes, of course.
They could have killed me. They should have killed me.
There's.
They chose to buy me off instead, the easy way, I think. $500. There, I didn't stop to count it. I just got out of there fast, and I ran all the way to your place. I didn't dare go home because they threatened me, Maria. They told me I'm not safe here now. Another, please.
Yes, yes, anything you want. Oh, John. Gunrunners are a very dangerous breed.
Hide me till the Golden Girl has left port. She just got in 2-3 days to dispose of her cargo.
The cellar. I'll make it comfortable for you, John.
Oh, thank you, my darling. Get down! Behind the sofa!
And I told you!
Maria, I'm dying. Oh, I love you, Maria.
I'll get you to a doctor now. You don't know how much I love you.
Turn that damn radio off, Braga. Find me some bazookis.
We don't have bazookis in Beirut. Where do you want me to burn the Golden Girl and sink her? Same place we sank the animals? The water is deep there. No chance for inquisitive divers.
No, I don't think we'll do that this time. It seems the same to west of the profitable ship. We can use her name to present the banks with forged bills of lading for non-existent cargoes, which we can then sell.
We get away with that once, twice, no more than that.
You're quite wrong, Braga. The banks are only obligated to check documents, which can easily be forged. They don't ever bother to check cargoes.
Maybe. That means each time we must change the ship's name.
Precisely. And what could be easier? Once we have disposed of our munitions to the highest bidder here, you will take the Golden Girl out of harbor, ostensibly en route to Singapore, and supposedly with her cargo still intact. But you will put in at the muni shipyards down the coast in Sidon. The Muni brothers are friends of mine, and I have already made the necessary arrangements. There our fine ship will suffer minor surgery.
Surgery?
One must to be removed. She will be repainted and renamed. A fine ship for which we can attract good cargoes by offering very low rates. You see where this will lead us?
Genius!
I do have certain talents, Braga. But that is not all. While the Golden Girl is being disguised, you will take a fast launch out to deep water. You will send out a mayday on the radio, announcing yourself as the Golden Girl and saying that you are on fire and rapidly sinking. By the time help arrives, you will have speeded back to Beirut, and there will be no trace left of the ship. Except perhaps a few charred pieces of timber that you might get to take along with you to toss overboard and mark the Golden Girl's passing. We'll collect insurance on the ship and her cargo. We will already have sold the cargo by then, and we will still have a fine ship with which we can start over. Very soon, my dear Braga, we will both be very rich.
Oh, sheer genius. There is no other word for it.
Yes, I will agree. This is an almost perfect crime.
Mr. Marshall to see you, sir, with his secretary. He says it's important.
Marshall, do I know him?
No, Mr. Ferris, you do not. My name is Hilary Marshall. This is my assistant, Miss Trent.
Miss Trent? And your business, sir?
My business, Mr. Ferris, is making money.
Ah, then please be seated.
I'm a busy man, Mr. Ferris. I won't waste time on preliminaries. I want your munitions from the Golden Girl. I understand they're insured for $5 million. I offer you a firm $2 million.
Three.
Two?
I do have another buyer, you know, waiting impatiently.
A 2.25, and that's final.
Gus?
A letter of credit on the Arab Bank of Beirut.
Excuse me, then. 2.5?
That depends.
Ah, my dear Mr. Souza, this is your equally dear friend, Mr. Piros. I have an offer of 2.5 million for my merchandise, if you would care to raise it. No, my dear friend, no haggling. We're not carpet salesmen, are we? And that is your final offer? Hold on, please. I have a firm 2.9, Mr. Marshall.
Then I go to 3, final.
Excuse me. 3 million, Mr. Sosa, will you top it?
Oh, what a shame.
Hey, but I have another deal that you might be interested in. I can sell you the Golden Girl, repainted, well disguised, and renamed. And then, when you have a suitably valuable cargo for her, I will buy her back from you at twice what you paid for her. And give you also first refusal on that cargo. That, dear Mr. Sousa, is an offer you cannot refuse, eh? Done.
And we too have a deal, Mr. Pierce?
We do indeed, Mr. Marshall.
Then, where may I inspect the merchandise?
I will take you to its hiding place, Mr. Marshall, as soon as the letter of credit is in my hands.
Of course, accepted. I'll go to the bank at once. Good day, Mr. Pierce.
Mr. Marshall. And perhaps we can do business again soon?
I do believe perhaps we can.
Miss Trent?
Mr. Pierce?
Well, that went off rather nicely, I thought.
I think he'd have settled for 2.5.
In a deal like this, speed itself is priceless.
Marshall! Why you shoot my man?
Look out! On the roof there, she's got a gun! Darling, are you all right?
No, my leg. Don't worry about it. Did you see who it was?
Yes, it was John Cooper's girl, Maria! No, Hillary, I'm beginning to believe that you're very shooting prone. I find that sad. Every time we go from point A to point B, someone starts shooting and you finish up invariably on the receiving end. It's ridiculous.
Thank you for the sympathy. Hello, Ibrahim? Ibby, this is Hillary. I want a counterfeit letter of credit on the Arab Bank of Beirut in favor of Mr. Grigory Piros for $3 million. I'm buying his armaments. What do you mean it's illegal? Don't be foolish. Now, a really good counterfeit, Ibby, that will stand up to very careful inspection. And I want it just as fast as you can make it. Good?
Room service?
Oh, yes, I ordered a bottle of Scotch Johnny.
Oh, dear.
Please don't anyone make any excited moves or I will shoot. Please be sure of that. You are Miss Joni Trent, I believe. And over there is Mr. Hillary Marshall. I am Mr. Aman from Singapore.
Leonard Nimoy again, and here's the fourth act of A Nearly Perfect Crime.
Mr. Aman from Singapore. And I am an honest and very angry businessman. Tired of being robbed by you. You pirates!
Mr. Aman, calm yourself, please. I am not what you perhaps take me to be.
You can't fool me, Mr. Marshall. I know exactly what you are. Ever since Piros offloaded my cargo of scrap brass from the Alamos a couple of months ago and sold it on the black market here, I have had a spy in his bureau office. And I know what you are doing. You are paying $3 million for my munitions that I paid good money for at the time of their loading. Can you think of any intelligent reason why I should not kill you both now?
Mr. Aman, I bleed for your terrible loss. But years of experience have taught me never to try to reason with a man who holds a gun pointed at my stomach. And...
So...
Johnny, run for your life.
I certainly will.
Johnny, where are you?
Over here. Oh, Hillary, you didn't get shot again, did you? Really?
Come on, down to the lobby. We'll be safer in a crowd of people.
No!
Please, please, no! I am Mr. Abiyat, hotel manager. I cannot allow shooting pistols in my lobby. Outside, on street, it's okay, but not in hotel. Remember, we are civilized people, only outside shooting, please.
Where did they go, Abiyat? Where?
Oh, you mean Commissioner Marshall and his lady?
Yes, where did they... Commissioner Marshall?
Oh, did I say Commissioner? I meant, of course, Mr. Marshall. Though, if a little money were to change hands...
Yes, there's the 100. No, tell me.
Thank you, sir. And in fair exchange, I will confess that, well... Like almost everybody else in Beirut these days, I am, forgive me, a spy.
Tell me about Marshall.
But also for the Americans, the Syrians, the Israelis, the PLO, in short, for anyone who will help to enlarge my miserable stipend.
I am not interested in your miserable stipend.
I have to be well informed about all my hotel guests. Mr. Marshall is registered here as businessman, but that is just his cover. We all know that he is actually a gun runner.
Oh, I know that. They told me so in Greece. They told me so here in Beirut.
But that is a cover story too, very expertly planted on all of us, both here and in Athens. And under those two cover stories is the real Commissioner Marshall. With a very senior officer from Interpol. Oh,
from Interpol?
Really?
Oh, and I have been shooting at him. Oh, what am I going to do? He'll have my head.
I suggest, Mr. Aman, that you make your amends by whatever means you can devise at the very earliest opportunity.
Fortify yourself with that. Bandage not too tight?
Thank you. The bandage is fine.
And you really are a sort of natural target, aren't you? You'd think they'd get lucky the third time.
But they did not. And I'm a little miffed over your behavior with Mr. Aman.
Miffed? For whatever for?
He was shooting at me and you chose to run. I find that an extraordinary way to behave.
But, darling, you told me to. I was obeying orders.
The instruction was merely a gentlemanly courtesy. I expected you to remain and help me. The only decent thing to do.
Who is it?
Special delivery envelope for Mr. Marshall.
Thank you. You mean in the middle of all this fighting, they still have special delivery?
In Beirut, it usually means seven young thugs in a jeep, all armed to the teeth. Now, let me have that. Aha, my letter of credit for $3 million. You know, that is as good a forgery as I've ever seen.
Oh.
Really, quite marvelous. Now, if we could only contact the impulsive Mr. Aman with a modicum of safety...
Who is it?
Mr. Aman, bearing a flag of truce.
What do I do, Hillary?
Open the door, my dear.
Oh, Mr. Marshall, sir, you see before you a most contrite man, seeking your pardon for a most dreadful mistake. Can you find it in your heart to forgive me? I have just discovered that you are a law enforcement officer, a very senior one, and I have no wish to be hounded to the end of the earth by Interpol.
Well, so much for my cover. Now, was it you who shot at us in Athens, Mr. Aman?
Oh, yes.
I ought to clap you in irons.
Oh, how can I make amends? I am a very wealthy man, Mr. Marshall.
No, I can't accept money, I'm afraid. But I'm not a man to hold a grudge, and perhaps I could persuade myself to accept, what about a case of champagne?
Well, done, sir. Done. And I cannot thank you enough.
For myself, I have already been sorely punished for my foolishness. I've lost $5 million worth of munitions I could have sold for twice that sum.
Perhaps not, Mr. Romano.
Oh?
It so happens that I have in my possession a letter of credit on the Arab Bank of Beirut in favor of Mr. Piros for $3 million. When it's presented to him, he will deliver the stolen cargo to me or to my chosen representative. Perhaps you'd like to find someone to accept it on your behalf.
Oh? Oh? Oh, Mr. Marshall, my dear friend, what a noble gesture. And I promise you, not a case of champagne, but a whole shipload. Yes, I swear it.
Oh, how nice. You know, ever since I first became nubile, I've always wanted to try a champagne bath. I mean, all those bubbles creeping up. Lovely.
Then we really have only one more problem on our hands, do we not?
Which is?
The matter of Mr. Piros.
Quite so.
I am only unhappy that Mr. Piros will go free. Even though his financial loss will be very considerable, will it not?
Oh, how so, Mr. Aval?
Because your letter of credit, I am convinced, must certainly be counterfeit.
Yes. How very astute of you. But even those of us who enforce the law must on occasion bend it a little. And it's a very good forgery indeed to fool Piros completely, and perhaps even the bank, too. Unless, of course, someone happened to tip them off after the cargo is delivered and before the letter is actually cashed.
Ah, I am sure there might be just one honest man in Beirut to do that.
Moreover, neither Piros nor Braga will go free. Braga is currently disguising the Golden Girl and giving her a new name at a shipyard in Sidon. Now, Beirut lives on its sea commerce, and that is a very serious offense here. The police will raid the shipyard, find the work in progress, and both Piros and Braga will spend the next 10 years of their lives in prison where they belong.
Oh, delightful, delightful.
Just for my own satisfaction, was it you who shot John Cooper, too?
Oh, dear, I feel so terribly guilty about that. But I thought that you and he were in partnership to steal my cargo. I'll never be able to make it up to him. He was not seriously hurt, I hope. My marksmanship was never very good.
John Cooper is recovering nicely in St. Mary's Hospital. But why don't you just send the poor fellow a case of beer? I'm sure he'd appreciate it.
And would you care for a whiskey and soda, Mr. Armand? And you, Hillary?
A quick one. We have a plane to catch.
The Mutual Radio Theater is brought to you 5 nights a week at this time. Tonight's original radio play, A Nearly Perfect Crime, was written by Alan Caillou and produced and directed by Fletcher Markle. Your host was Leonard Nimoy. Our stars were Lloyd Bachner and Janet Waldo. Featured in the cast were Richard Peel, Marvin Miller, Larry Moss, Gladys Holland, and Alan Caillou. The music for Radio Theater was composed and conducted by Nelson Riddle. John Harlan speaking. Associate Director of Mutual Radio Theater is Ken McManus. Sound effects were created by Bud Tollefson. Mark Trella is Production Supervisor. Recording Engineer, Hal McDonald. Music Editor, Lee Ringette. The Elliott Lewis production of Mutual Radio Theater is a presentation of CVI.
Mutual Radio Theater has been brought to you by Sears, a name that means quality and value. A name that you can count on for service and dependability. Sears, where America shops for value.
This is Lorne Greene. Listen in on Monday for another story about the West, as it was then, as it is now.
And for our remaining time this week, let's drop in on Charlie McCarthy. Warning, music lovers may want to tune out a little early because Charlie's going to do his version, plagiarized version, that is, of Carmen. From 1947, here it is.
And now for my plagiarized version of the opera Carmen. Tell them about it, Deems Carpenter.
Very well, Charlie. Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to witness a musical mutilation of the opera Carmen by Charles Bizet McCarthy. The opening scene is in a cigarette factory where we find two girls in their early nicotines. The house lights dim and go out, but you can't because we've locked the doors. And now the curtain reluctantly rises as our Hooper descends.
Yeah. Oh, Anita.
What is it, Carmen?
I'm so sick of this tobacco factory. All day long bending over a hot cigarette.
The boss told me he'd move me to the package department as soon as I learned to count to 20. Then I won't have to wrap paper around this corsook anymore.
Why don't you be like me? I just wrapped the boss around my fingers.
Monkey business here.
Jigger, here comes El Señor Sarpus.
Yeah, I can't figure out what's come over this younger generation we have now. They act like crazy screwballs.
Señor Swenson, I want to go home. I'm not feeling well.
Is that so? Well, you don't look sick.
But I am. I'm sick as a dog.
Is that so? Well, let me feel your nose.
Well, I feel so bad because I have to go to my grandma's funeral.
Oh, so that's how it is, huh? Well, that's three times that your grandma has died lately.
Well, she's up, she's down. She never has been very, very well, you know.
I guess not, no.
No.
Well, you ain't fooling me, young lady. You always want to get off every time that Carlos McCarthy is fighting the bull.
Oh, he's so handsome, yeah. And I'm so lonesome.
Well, you know something. I am lonesome, too. Now, what do you say, Carmen, my cutie, huh?
Oh, you Scandinavian Gregory Peck.
Yeah. The South American Yane Russell, do you? Say, what you say about joining me in a little smorgasbord? I have imported herring and lutefisk. We say Wednesday evening, huh, cutie?
Wednesday?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I think my grandma, she's going to do it again.
Ah.
It's okay if I go now?
I guess so, because I go myself. Hello.
Oh, dear, why did I ever become a bullfighter? I wish Carmen were here to give me courage. Oh, where is that valet of mine? Raimondo!
Yes, your Toreadorship.
Yeah. Didn't you hear me calling you?
Oh, sigh. Oh.
Did my new Toreador outfit arrive?
Oh, sigh.
How does it look?
Oh, so. I said perhaps you'd better wear the breeches that you bought in Mexico.
No, they're a little too tight, south of the border.
I don't know. I think the jacket's very smart. I mean, look at all those buttons. Genuine mater of pearl.
Oh, really? Yeah? Well, tell me honestly, how do I look? Is it a fit?
Oh, well, you might say it's a fit in a epileptic sort of way, I suppose.
Oh, Carlos, my little, wonderful, terrific, and sensational bullfighter. You look so beautiful.
Oh, so you two have found it out, huh?
Oh, you look just like a page out of a scroll.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put you in again. Right away.
I can't stand it, Carmen. You mustn't do it.
Why don't you like me to pooch you?
Huh?
Other men do.
Other men, uh-huh. Carmen, I am afraid you are fickle.
What kind of a fickle? A sweet fickle or a dill fickle?
A hot tomato fickle.
Begging my pardon, senor.
What
could you
it?
Tell me which way is it to Alvarez Street?
Yes.
What is this, an alley?
Yeah.
Will you get out of here and take that Tijuana accent with you? I have to go now. I must not keep the bull waiting.
Oh, Carlos. Carlos, my...
Ha ha ha!
stay awake, Bergen.
Yeah.
Carlos, my handsome toreador, take care of yourself, will you?
Yeah. Oh, but sir, you don't have to worry, sir.
No,
the fight's been fixed, and you're going to win. I talked it over with the bosses.
Yeah, but did you talk to the bull?
No, not yet, but he's right outside. I'll bring him in.
All right, I'd like a word with him.
Uh-oh, Ferdinand.
Yes?
Now, Senor Bull, you understand you are going to let Carlos win, huh?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Now, I've worked out something spectacular. We're going to use the T formation, and you come running around my right end. And what I mean is way around it.
Oh, sure.
And I'll use my rubber sword.
And of course, Senor Bull, you wear your rubber ornaments. Don't you know that?
Yeah,
and for a finish, you roll over and play dead. Got it?
It's in the bag.
All right. I'll see you later. Don't slam the door. Oh, I told you not to slam the door.
I'm sorry.
All right, get out of here.
I am here, Cram. Just simmer down. Friends, I am a Spanish troubadour, and they call me Whispering Ursel Twing.
Are you a wandering troubadour?
Well, not exactly. Well, yes, I am, too, because, well, I keep wondering how I ever got into this business.
What's your favorite song?
Oh, my favorite song, I think it's the song about my girlfriend, Bessie.
Bessie who?
Bessie May Mucho.
Oh.
Do you know Tico Tico?
No, but I can give you Tico for Tuco.
That's good. Make mine with lemon.
Well, I can't quite do that, no. But I can sing it sour.
That I believe.
Well, don't be smart. Friends,
you haven't any.
I have just written a new song, and it's called... Would you like to know the title at all?
We didn't ask.
Yeah. It's called, What Are You Doing Groundhog's Day Eve?
Uh-huh. I think we can do without that.
Yes, and I have another peachy one that's entitled, and I quote...
What else?
Are you paying attention?
Yeah.
Oh, hail this gladsome day. Mother-in-law has ended her stay.
You write songs, but does anybody buy them?
Does anybody buy them? Well, for goodness sakes, my gosh, does anybody buy them? I'll have you know I also write songs for royalty.
Oh, for the king and queen?
No, for the jack.
Oh, for the jack.
Also, I was asked to sing at Princess Elizabeth's wedding, too.
For goodness sake, what were you going to sing?
Royal.
All right, oh, yeah, we know.
Rich. Well, you want to hear a song that we know?
Oh, one that you know?
Yeah.
Oh, all righty. Hands across the border.
No.
No, well, I got the wrong key. I'll get right.
Yeah,
hands across the border.
You know, this could easily start a war between Mexico and the States.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I'll have you know that I am not here today and gone tomorrow.
No?
No, I'm here today and gone today. Goodbye.
Well, Charlie, here's the happy reunion. Since you last talked to your friend Madeline Carroll, she's been over to Paris and back again.
Oh, oui, Madeline. Did you enjoy your trip, mon cher?
oui, Charlot. C'était très, très magnifique.
Oh, très good. Did you miss me?
I thought of you all the time, Charlie. And just to prove it, I brought you a present from Paris.
Oh, no. A present? For me?
Yes.
Oh, you shouldn't have. What is it?
Yes.
Well, now let me see. It isn't the Eiffel Tower. No. scooter, perhaps?
No, Charlie, it's better than that. Oh, it's a letter.
A letter? Oh, is there a check in it?
Charlie, dear, this is a very unusual letter.
Oh, then it has a check in it.
No, but it was written by a little French admirer of yours.
Oh, who is she?
It isn't a she, it's a boy.
Disappointment number two. This is getting worse all the time.
His name is Toutou Gaston Petitjean.
That does it. That does it. That's Toutou much, much for me. Who is he?
Well, he's a little assistant who sits on the knee of the great French ventriloquist, the great Pierre.
Oh, gee, that's great.
And just like you, he's a little mannequin.
No. Today I am a mannequin.
You should see this boy, Charlie. He's the idol of the Parisienne. The ladies all adore him.
That's so.
Mm-hmm. In fact, he's the toast of France.
Oh, isn't that good? My. How old is this little French toaster? I mean, this squirt.
Well, I'd say it's about your age, Charlie.
Oh, yes.
And he's very eager to learn the American language. So he wrote to you in English, and he's hoping that you'll answer. Would you like to hear what he wrote, Charlie?
Well, no.
Oh, but it's a very charming letter.
Oh, then read it.
Let me read it. Now, yes. He starts off by saying, yes. Dear Charlot, my petit shoe...
Petit shoe? Does he mean I'm a heel or something?
No, Charlie, no. Petit shoe is French for cabbage head.
Oh, well, that's cabbage head. That's worse yet. Why, the fresh punk, what?
No, Charlie. In French, cabbage head is a term of endearment.
Cabbage head is? Well, it doesn't translate very well, I'll say that, Mark.
And then he writes... Every week, I listen to hear you on the air over the TSF.
The TSF? Well, the little fool, he means NBC, doesn't he?
No, Charlie, dear. You see, they don't call it radio over there. Oh. They call it TSF, which stands for Telephone Sans Fil.
Oh.
Telephone without wires.
Sure, I'll bet you. Telephone without wires. I don't think it'll ever be practical.
Well, be that as it may. Let me read you the rest of Tutu's letter.
Oh, Dudu, yes, Dudu.
I try to obtain your program every Monday morning, but I am not very successful.
Oh, that's too bad, isn't it? That is too bad, yeah. I wonder if you ever try tuning in on Sunday night. The dope cabbage head. That's the part that burns me off.
But Charlie, don't you realize that the clocks are 5 hours faster in Paris than here?
They are?
Mm-hmm.
Well, can't they slow them down?
Now, why hasn't someone thought of that?
Well, I just did. Somebody ought to make notes of these things.
But to go on with the letter. Tutu says...
Tutu, here we go again. Oh, I know, I like him.
I am glad you are very popular in America, yes?
Yes.
And maybe sometime you will come to see I in Paris, no?
Yes, no, He sure does murder the English, doesn't he? Is he illiterate? I guess he must be. Yes, no?
Oh, no, I think he's very cute. And, Charlie, he signed his letter, Your petite Parisian pal, Toutou Gaston Petitjean.
Toutou Gaston Petitjean. He must get awful tired lugging that handle around. Cabbage head. That's the one that cuts me, cabbage head. See, I got it. Take a letter.
Yes, sir.
Monsieur Petitjean. Got that?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Dear Gopher Puss.
Gopher Puss?
Yes, Gopher Puss. In America, that's a term of endearment.
Well, I never heard of that, Charlie.
Well, I never heard of cabbage head. Gopher Puss stays.
Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
Yeah, don't let it happen too often. To continue, quote. Have you got that?
Yes.
I never hear your program in America with or without wires. Sans phony. But I will forgive you for that cabbage head crack if, when I get to Paris, you will chercher la femme for me, and I will do the same for you in America. You're American, homie. Charlie. Augie. I'll mail that as it is.
Very good, sir. And I'm sure Tutu will be most pleased when he receives this letter.
Yeah, I thought it was rather well put myself. What kind of a boss does Tutu have?
Oh, he's very handsome, debonair, and he has a moustache.
Oh, he has. Oh, yes. Maybe Bergen could raise a moustache, huh? Well, I don't know. It might be too much of a strain on his system.
You think he'd look better with a mustache, Charlie?
Well, it would help, yes. You couldn't see his lips move while I was talking.
Say that. You know, little Tutu always speaks well of his boss.
Well, maybe he gets paid more than I do.
Well, he told me that his salary is 1,500 centimes a week.
Yeah, well, that 1,500 centimes. Wow. I could kick myself for what I'm working for. I could kick Bergen, too. 1,500 centimes.
That's right, Charlie.
Is he sucking it away? Or has he got a big family?
Well, I don't know about that, but I do know that that's his salary.
Gee. I want Bergen's. Hey, Bergen, did you hear that?
What's that, Charlie?
Miss Carroll was just telling me about a ventriloquist over in Paris who pays this boy $1,500 a week. Now think of that. Gee. Yeah. It's enough to make it fall off. Yeah. I could jump on it. 1,500 a week.
Oh, 1,500 a week?
Yeah.
Why, I can't believe that.
Well, Miss Carroll, just said to Miss Carroll, just tell me about this central. Go on, tell him about it. Is it true?
That's right. 1,500 tons.
Oh, 1,500 centimes.
Yeah, centimes.
Yeah, well, centimes is, that's French for,
Yeah, well, it's still a buck.
Oh, no, it isn't. No.
It's
still a buck.
It's 100 centimes to make a franc.
With mustard?
Why, a centime, why, that's less, why, it's much less than a cent.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Less than a cent?
Why, of course it is.
Is there anything less than a penny?
Of course there is.
Well, how come you haven't paid me off in it?
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.